Since iTunes only keeps the last 100 episodes of any show, some of our show topics that seem to help the most people are no longer available when people search on iTunes. So, in an effort to make that information available to more people, from time to time we're going to re-air some of our most popular show topics. You can also go to kickitnaturally.com and search for any topic in our search box. For now, enjoy this show that originally aired in 2014.
T.C. Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hill, author, natural health expert, producer, extraordinaire. We also have Will Hottie Patati Schmidt coming to us. We're from the Bay Area. I'm actually really not here, so the show's probably not going to be that great today. This was pre-recorded, so I'm sorry if you have to sit through all this without me.
Thank you, Kenna, who's still not here 2 weeks later. That's just rude now.
I know.
That was fine to be fancy off and filming for a while, but 2 weeks, I just maybe she doesn't like us.
Well,
it's happened before.
We're going to keep rocking on regardless.
Okay, we'll see how that works out. It's probably not going to go that well.
Yeah.
A couple of guys talking about stuff. Who wants that? But we do have the topic of dairy, and people like to talk about that topic and lactose intolerance. And we covered a bunch of stuff last week leading up, so if you're just listening to this episode first, you're doing it wrong.
Great.
Yeah.
Go back.
Go back and listen to episode one. You can go to kickitnaturally.com and just put in the search box, lactose intolerance, and you'll find part one on there and you can listen to it if you're not listening on iTunes or something like that. So we covered a bunch of questions. Why don't we jump into this because we have a lot more questions to cover. Let's just go right to Nancy.
Okay. Nancy from Chicago. I only use raw goat or sometimes raw cow milk and found it not to upset one of my family members who was very lactose intolerant. But for her, I did usually keep her glass of raw milk out of the fridge into a cabinet overnight. Interesting.
Yeah, very. And we talked last week about how some people do better with raw milk, and we talked about all the reasons that that could be. But I've never heard of leaving it out of the fridge. I have heard people talking about doing that with eggs before. But do you know any reason why leaving it out of the fridge is beneficial?
Yeah. So bacteria also ferment lactose. And in warmer temperatures, bacteria can grow faster. So there will be higher populations of bacteria in the raw milk that will be they'll be metabolizing the lactose and breaking it down into other sugars or ferments. So if she really does have a lactose intolerance, there will be less lactose in the milk the more bacteria get to work on that lactose.
Okay, she asks a little bit later, what about people who are lactose intolerant but using raw kefir? And that's the same type of situation as, with some type of fermented dairy or something, a lot of those proteins and the lactose is broken down by that bacteria, so it can be better tolerated. But then it can also get into the thing that we've talked about on other episodes where, things like fermented foods can really be beneficial unless you go nuts and you're loading up on all this craziness.
Yeah, you can definitely get too much fermented food. Like, you don't need excessive amounts of lactic acid, and that's one thing. They're also creating like alcohols, ethanol, and lactic acid. Just depends on the type of microorganism working on the food.
Without Kenna here, we were able to mention alcohol without having a shot request.
We just breezed right through that.
Yeah, that was crazy.
I know. But so there will be different ferments, which can be their own problem. They may not trigger the same kind of lactose symptoms, but they can have more subtle effects of just slowing your metabolism, influence inflammation, impairing hormone balances. So those are not necessarily desirable, and I think it's a big problem when people feel like they need to eat fermented food all the time.
Yeah, I do like to do like either probiotics or fermented foods in phases, almost the same way that I would use a probiotic supplement, where I would use it to replenish the system and then allow that to flourish in the system, but when you're totally dumping it in all the time, you can really overdo some stuff.
Yeah, and they're totally useful. Like, they definitely contribute to our health. It's a mutualistic relationship. They create vitamins that we need, like a lot of the B vitamins and such. They help break down other foods more fully. They help get the minerals from the plants into our tissues. So that's awesome. And they get to eat some of the food that we eat. So that we're their food source, really, or we're their fuel source. But too much of that, like, you don't necessarily want, like, you maybe you're a farmer and you want a dozen chicken, but you don't want like a bazillion chicken on your farm. They're right. Gonna like go crazy. You know?
Chickens, like, are mean too. Yeah, you don't want that.
I think it's a good sort of metaphor though. Like, some livestock is good, like way too many, you're gonna have a stampede and die.
Right. You know, let's look at this other viewpoint, though, is like, because when you look at the fermented dairy and how some people tolerate that better, we haven't even really talked about dairy fats yet. And when you look at dairy fats, butter and heavy cream, with those foods, you can get a lot of the benefits that come with dairy with less of the trouble, because there's fewer proteins and sugars in those foods, especially if you look at butter. And when you talk about butter, if that's still problematic for you, you could even do ghee, yeah, which is a clarified butter, or you can clarify it yourself, where you kind of warm it on a low heat and then just kind of scoop all of the proteins off when they rise. And so that can be one way to get a lot of good benefits without any of the trouble. And when I have people that go off dairy for 30 days to see how they're doing, when it comes time to introduce it, I like to see them introduce either ghee or clarified butter or butter and heavy cream first before they introduce the other ones, just to see how they do on the dairy products that don't have as much of those proteins that can be problematic for some people, and the lactose and all that kind of stuff. So that's a great way to kind of use some training wheels as you're starting to test it out with yourself.
Yeah. And don't give up if one thing doesn't work for you. Like, oh, if you had a glass of milk and you got super stuffy or histamine-y, whatever, you may be able to do butter or ghee. For me, ghee is amazing. Like, it's just awesome. It's the most delicious thing ever. Right. Milk is fine. For me personally, heavy cream messes me up, though.
Really? That's awesome, because that's the thing that I can do better than any of them.
Probably because I'll use, like, the whole little mini carton that it comes. Like, oh, I'll just make my smoothie with a heavy cream.
Right. It's delicious.
Yeah, it's like eating a box of butter, probably.
Right. And it has all the saturated fats and so very pro-anabolic. You just have some before you go to bed and you just sleep like a baby. It's,
yeah.
Right.
So,
okay, let's go to Nyssa, because she kind of talks about some of this stuff, too.
Nyssa says, where'd she go? Oh, from St. John's, Indiana. Why does casein cause sore throats, ear infections, and sinus infections in some people? Is it true that this is a problem with the gut? Is there something that can be done to heal this and have the ability to eat cheese freely again? Now I see her motivation.
Yeah.
I've tried the milk jest enzymes, and unfortunately, they're just not enough for me. I haven't been able to give up cheese completely yet.
You know, before you answer this, one interesting thing about cheese is that some of those caseomorphin things that we talked about that are morphine-like, the way that they make cheese kind of frees up some of those a little bit more and makes them more available. And I wonder if that has some type of effect on people that are like, do not take away my cheese. You know, they get real upset. It's like their favorite thing ever. And you got to wonder if that's having that type of effect on the person, that it's creating almost like a psychological love for cheesy items.
I feel that. I definitely feel that. I also feel like there's a lot of very useful B vitamins that come in cheese. And those are the products of fermentation, from the little microorganisms fermenting the milk and creating these useful byproducts for us. One other thing beyond the lactase, because she said she tried the milk jest, is to look at stuff like her own hormone profile. Like, does she have elevated cortisol or elevated estrogen? And sometimes those heightened immune system responses that we have when our body is under stress, such as like if you have elevated estrogen from taking birth control or from a protein deficiency, if you're a hypothyroid, a lot of these things can elevate our stress hormones and our immune response. So we will be much more prone to inflammatory and histamine reactions when we're in a stress state. So I would have her do a hormone panel profile and see like, oh, is that off? Maybe look at her endocrine function and see like, is in my body in a stress state making me hypersensitive?
You know, one thing that she's asking, is this a problem with the gut? And this is a good example. I mean, she's obviously, she may have heard that somewhere. You know, like you talked about before, sometimes it, you need some time for that bacteria to adjust to fermenting these foods correctly and allowing some of those nutrients to be better processed. So that could be a factor for the for a person. But again, when you're looking at gut permeability, all these other factors, there's a wide variety of options for milk to be having these type of reactions for a person. And these are the type of reactions that milk often will have for me, but some of the other dairy products won't, and milk won't anymore if I don't have tons of it, kind of thing. So don't just look at one thing. Do these things that Will's talking about, but, you know, are there still gut permeability issues? For me, you know, it took a long time of being off the PPIs and fixing digestion and letting the gut lining heal better before I could introduce these foods at all. And still today, if I have a lot of tomatoes, a lot of milk, or a lot of almonds, I don't do so well. Like, I can feel that. I can eat some of them now to where before some of them would just wreck me. So now I can eat some, but if I'm eating any of those things every day, it's a problem for me. So there's a lot of factors in there that could be contributing to it.
Mm-hmm. Donna from Sayreville, New Jersey says, I know cow's milk is best when served to baby cows and not humans, but I love it so much. Is it harming me if I don't have obvious signs? From what I read, it is better from a sugar point of view to drink full fat milk. Is that true?
True. And let's also, we haven't really focused a lot on some of the other benefits of milk. And, you know, if someone's drinking milk and they're not having problems from it, I say that you may be a person that just be processing it well, and you're getting a lot of the benefits. If I look at a negative side of it, you might want to try dumping it all for 30 days just to see if you thought you were doing well, but you really get lifted to this whole new level that you didn't even know about. That could be worth trying. But if somebody's doing well on milk, let's talk about some of the benefits that can come from drinking milk.
Sure. It's an excellent source of proteins, fairly stable sugars, as opposed to like really high glycemic sugars, and very bioavailable calcium, which is awesome. And it's the right kinds of fats. Also, saturated fats that really support healthy hormone levels, healthy sex hormone production.
Along with a lot of the nutrients that are needed to use that calcium correctly.
Yeah, and so it makes it bioavailable. You really do absorb it well. If you're digesting it properly, like it can be a great source of all of those things. So that's awesome.
Yeah, and you're right that you don't want to do a fat-free milk. You really want a whole fat milk. And I do like to even see, a long time ago, people judged milk. Bing! Kenna's trying to remind us that she wants to tell us something about Audible.com.
Oh, here it is.
Today, all of our listeners can get a free audiobook from Audible.com. Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook for all the details.
Okay. Thank you, Kenna. Not really, Kenna. But one thing, they used to judge milk by that line of cream that would rise to the top, and how much cream was there was kind of the judge of how quality the milk was. And some say that that's where that homogenization process came from, is taking all the fats out and then putting back in just the amount that they want, but it would allow it all to float together and not separate like that, so that they could sell it in just a normal carton instead of like a glass jar. I don't know if that's really how it happened, but it does seem that even with whole milk that's homogenized, you're getting less fat than you would from just milk that came out of a cow and you stuck it in a pail.
Straight raw milk.
Yeah, straight raw milk is going to be better. So you can find, even in stores that don't sell raw milk, and it's illegal in many states, and we could even talk about that for a second, but you can often find unhomogenized cream on top milk, and that's whole milk, and that's what you want, not the stuff that had fat taken out, fat put back in, and they add these stupid synthetic vitamins as well.
Yeah, I've never seen a raw milk. I mean, I guess it would not be raw anymore if it was skimmed. Well, I guess it could be. You could skim it yourself, but almost any store-bought milk that isn't whole has been processed and pasteurized, you know.
Right. And so there's a lot of fear out there about drinking raw milk. They use some bad information to kind of scare us away from drinking it, but the reality is that there really aren't any recorded deaths from raw milk in 30-something years or so. The illnesses that were reported when they, like the CDC, did their report on it, they included all these people that got sick making that Mexican bathtub cheese. I don't know how it works, but it's something that you make at home using raw milk, and you make it in your bathtub. Where the same place where you washed your nakedness.
Where I make my meatballs?
Yeah, right, exactly. So they included that because it's made with raw milk. So when they looked at the numbers of people that got sick by raw milk, they included all the people that got sick by stuff you made in your bathtub.
Wow.
Right, so raw milk is really beneficial because, like we talked to last week, it's almost always made from pastured cows that were not eating grains. They were eating live grass as they wandered around in a yard and were not shoved in a cage and jacked up with antibiotics and hormones and such. Mm. Also, it is actually, when you look at the actual numbers, there's a lot more food toxicity cases reported from pasteurized milk than any type of raw milk, even when you compare the percentages of people who drink raw milk, which is like over 10 million people in the country now drink it regularly, compared to the pasteurized stuff. So don't let those numbers and that stuff scare you away. If you can find a good source of raw milk, it can be beneficial as long as you're covering all these other grounds we're talking about.
Yeah, and scrubbing your bathtub regularly.
Right, right. If you're a health, fitness, or nutrition professional, check out our other podcast, Six Figure Health Pro. We dig into the latest marketing techniques and business growing strategies for health professionals. To learn how to take your business to the next level, search for Six Figure Health Pro on iTunes or Stitcher, or go to sixfigurehealthpro.com to learn more. Now do what you're told.
Jackie from South Carolina. When my daughter was a baby, now 22, she broke out in a terrible rash when given a milk-based formula. Almost instantly after 1 year old, she grew out of it. Any thoughts on why this happened? She just had a baby. Should we be concerned about it happening again?
There's a lot of things that could have happened, but, you know, the one key word is their milk-based formula. What else was in the formula?
Yeah, it's like cheese whiz is a cheese.
Right.
Cheese food.
Yeah, squirt cheese. You're not lactose intolerant if squirt cheese doesn't make you feel good. It's just squirt right. Cheese.
My cheese whiz doesn't sit with me. I'm lactose intolerant.
Yeah, so that's one thing to consider. But like we look, you know, a lot of times digestion is not developed until a person starts to mature a little bit more. So any of those problems that we talked about coming from poor digestion could have been occurring with that baby.
Yeah, for sure. It's like won't honey kill a baby or something like that? And it's normally
I thought that was chocolate with a dog. I'm not sure how all that
works. But yeah, for sure. You don't have digestion fully set up yet for that. Maybe for human milk, but maybe not for cow milk just yet. But you will just get stronger digestion in general, just like you don't really feed an infant steak. Like you kind of give it time to develop. But also,
you're not supposed to give an infant steak?
Not. Well, they need teeth.
Oh, well, it was so delicious, I thought he would like it.
Right, just shove it in. But formulas are most often chemicals. They're just like pure synthetic chemicals with a touch of maybe some of the thing it says is the main ingredient.
Right.
Like almond milk, it's like 3 almonds per gallon, and then mostly carrageenan and guar gum and that sort of thing.
Right.
So,
and carton.
Yeah, and carton. So baby formula is, I don't know, I wouldn't go there with the baby.
Yeah, so maybe not judge so much off of something like that.
Yeah. Next guy, Anna from Phoenix, Arizona.
I think Anna's totally a girl.
Probably, yeah, the way it's spelled. I just drink lactose, as opposed to the male spelling of
right,
Anna.
Right?
I just drink lactose fat-free. Oh, I just drink lactose-free, fat-free milk, mostly in the AM with a double chai spice tea bag. Can't give it up.
Yeah, so that's not really milk. It doesn't have any fat in it. It doesn't have any lactose. It's
you mean
just
water?
Yeah,
water.
It's just a beverage that somebody got you to buy kind of thing.
No, I'm glad it's working for you. It does still have like the other sort of synthetic. By law, it has to have added vitamin A and D, which are usually almost entirely synthetic. But if you're not having issues with processing that, okay, cool. Enjoy your chai.
You know, one thing is if you do well on the lactose-free milk and you're not doing well on other milk, then you're probably one of those people who's just not producing enough of that enzyme. And maybe if you supplemented with that enzyme, you might do okay to drink real milk that would have all the other benefits that come from milk, not just the joy of your super triple latte spicy cha-ta, ta-ta-ta.
Yeah, yeah. So you're still getting the calcium. That's cool. Tanya from Little Rock. I actually feel better when I avoid dairy altogether, but my concern for osteoporosis keeps me coming back to ensure I'm getting enough calcium.
So this is a common, I think, a misconception, really. And I never, if a client is not using dairy or whatever, I never try to force dairy on them just to get more calcium because there's other sources out there. And but osteoporosis is not just about your calcium intake. And if you're drinking milk, like we talked about, the processed junk that's fat-free and all this kind of stuff, you're not really getting the benefits from that calcium that you think that you're getting. But there's things like, you know, phytates that come from grains, and even stress can inhibit calcium absorption. So can a lack of protein. So if you can't break down protein properly and you're taking all this calcium to try and keep from having osteoporosis, you're doing it wrong. It's not doing what you think that you're doing. And this is common because the United States is has one of the highest rates of osteoporosis, even though we have one of the highest intakes of calcium. So that should help you understand that following what the mainstream is telling you to do is not the right route to go when osteoporosis is a concern.
Yeah, I fully agree. It doesn't necessarily fix it to have more calcium. I think if you are dealing with that issue of osteoporosis or worried about it, you should listen to the episode that we made on energy production. I don't know what number that was, but you can search by title on iTunes. But there, like when we look at calcium deposition and calcium circulation, it's super critical, obviously, for structure of our bones, but also for the firing of our muscles and our nerves. You can't be a human without it. So it's very much tied in with metabolism. So learning how to support your metabolism will help keep calcium in the right place.
Right. And think about this is that, you know, like 99% of the calcium in our body is in our bones, but that 1% that's everywhere else is like the most important stuff because it makes everything else happen. And we even had an osteoporosis episode, but if you search for something on iTunes and you don't find it, go to kickitnaturally.com and then search for it because we have all of our old episodes there where iTunes only holds the last 100 episodes.
Yeah, you can just type in the search box at Kick It Naturally, just type in osteoporosis, and there we dive deep, deep into what I was just talking about with how calcium sort of can get leached from your bones and deposited in soft tissues when cellular respiration or cellular energy production has a kink in it if it's not working properly.
And we even talk about some tests on there that you can do for yourself to look at, are there factors that are making you more susceptible to that problem and what you can do about them?
Mm-hmm. Next one, Simon from the UK. Oh, I found the way to... Okay, never mind. It's cool. I was going to say I found why... Kinna usually stumbles over words. I just found I'll just skip them. I'll just skip hard
The ones that are hard. But
it's from Wrexham, which I probably said wrong.
But Kinna wanted to mention that you were stuttering just a minute ago. She wanted to bring that up.
Thanks, Kinna. Can you please talk about the effectiveness of the scratch test for allergies? Thanks, gang.
You know, I this is tricky because... You know, I know some people who have had a lot of success with this and their clients, but you also see a lot of false readings with them. So I think we mentioned once before on this show that to do a scratch test is fine. It could give you a starting point of what to look at. Just don't take that test and follow it because it's likely that some of the information is going to be wrong. So the thing that we see most effective is... an elimination diet. And I even added a whole chapter into Kick Your Fat in the Nuts, chapter 9, about that, just because I've seen how effective it can be. And that's where you eliminate the things that most commonly cause trouble for 30 days, and then you add them back in one at a time to see if any of them are creating problems for you. So doing a scratch test to get a place to start is fine. Just don't, like we talked about at the beginning of last week, you do those tests and they tell you that you should not talk to your neighbor and you live right next door to your neighbor. It's just problematic. And people seem to be restricting things that could be providing a broader range of nutrients. And they're leaving them out because of the test told them.
Yeah. In general, the IgG and IgH allergy tests, whether it's a scratch test or whatever,
blood test, right.
There's a lot of false positives. They say that there's less cases of false negatives, but I don't believe it. I feel like because I think the main thing that they're missing is when you eat a food, it gets processed in your digestive system and totally changed, like molecularly, chemically, like fermented. Right. So you may eat something, you may do a scratch test with some molecule that you don't have a reaction to, but maybe that food, when you eat it, it gets fermented in a way where all of a sudden it creates a problem, you know? Just the same way with these false positives, like I just don't think it's a good basis. And I think you're right to say the elimination diet is still the gold standard that people go by.
Because think about this, you know, like especially with a scratch test, that food molecule is going into your blood there at the skin level. And is it causing a problem? And then if so, you shouldn't eat it. But if that food molecule is still in that same state when you eat it and it's getting into your system, then you're not breaking it down properly into nutrients and it's getting into the system with still its own identity of a peanut butter sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a problem in itself that needs to be fixed before you can figure out if you can eat that food or not.
Yeah. And that's usually the problem of like, oh, if it is broken down, then it's not the thing anymore. That would be an antigen. All right, next, a couple more questions.
We already covered Nancy's earlier. We can skip that and just finish up with Peggy.
Peggy.
Nailed it.
Nice. From North Carolina, Peggy says, why am I able to tolerate dairy? I read that right. Tolerate dairy while I'm pregnant, but not at any other time. Is it because my baby needs the calcium? This is a cool question.
Yeah, and so it turns out, I actually researched this when Sarah was pregnant and found that the placenta actually increases the amount of enzymes that your body is making to make that available for the baby as well. I think I had a sister that had the same situation where she couldn't do dairy very well, but when she was pregnant, she could suck it all down and do great and do it well. And as soon as she wasn't pregnant anymore, it gave her problems again. So it's likely that her issue was the lactose part of the problem. Because if the problem is the other things we talked about, I don't think that's really going to be fixed just because you're pregnant.
Yeah, that's one thing. Like, you definitely have an enhanced capacity to process food to feed the baby. You also have a big hormonal shift. So you have an elevated progesterone to protect the baby. And that can also really it can really support the body in not having that same reaction it would if it was in a low progesterone, high estrogen state. So while estrogen levels may also be high when you're pregnant, like, the elevated progesterone does a lot to counter the antigen response that the body might have to something like dairy.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Cool. So when we're wrapping this up and looking at it, the first thing to understand is that I think lactose intolerance, as people understand it, is more about missing that enzyme. And if you have the enzyme or you supplement with the enzyme and you're still having trouble, it's likely that there's more of a food sensitivity issue to the proteins in that dairy that's creating trouble for you, which can kind of lead back to digestion a little bit more. Is there something else you want to sum up there with?
Yeah, for sure. So a lot of the proteins that may be an issue, not necessarily just casein, which is innate in all milk, but or at least dairy, cow milk, but also proteins that are elevated in that particular milk because of either how the livestock was raised or how the food that the livestock ate was raised. So we talked early on about how stress situations for the crops that are being grown, whether they're being like grown with artificial or industrial fertilizers or with a lot of herbicides, or if the cows themselves are in a very stressed state, all those things will elevate immune system function in either the crops or the livestock or the crops that the livestock eat, and that can create much higher presence of things that cause or a much higher presence of antigens in the dairy. So the moral of the story is, like, try to source your food, your dairy and your meats and your vegetables from crops that are grown in a way that makes the plants and animals happy. When they're in a less stressed state, there will be far less antigens, far lower immune system activation in your food, and that will make it much more likely that you won't have an issue with it.
You know, another thing, too, that we didn't even talk about is the fact that there's a lot of concern with milk, with kids, with allergies and asthma, and there seems to be a very big connection between milk being the cause of that issue for a lot of kids. And if you think about it, if that kid doesn't have the right enzyme to process the milk correctly, then the body might try to make digestion stronger to process that better. And that's kind of where we see people move heavy into that parasympathetic state, where that's the rest and digest state. So the body's moving as far into that state as it can to boost its ability to digest the food that's coming in. And that's where we see a lot of allergies and asthma, is that people that are kind of stuck in that state. Kind of makes me wonder if it's a problem with the, you know, the lack of enzymes or some other inability to process those dairy proteins that's actually causing the allergy and asthma in that manner.
Well, yeah, and earlier, I don't remember if it was this episode or the last one, but I mentioned the enzyme chitinase.
Oh, right.
So chitinase was actually first discovered in the asthmatic lungs of humans, like the whole family of those proteins. And those chitinases, those are antifungal enzymes. So they break down chitin, which is one of the main polymers that fungus cell walls are made of. So plants and animals will make more chitinase in response to fungal predators and fungal parasites. So when your livestock or the vegetables or the food or animal products that you're consuming are being bombarded by fungus, they'll have elevated amounts of chitinase, and those create inflammation in our own tissues, like when we ingest them.
Right, and since it seems that the same issue is not as common with the raw milk, you can see why that might be a situation where it wouldn't happen in that case.
Right, yeah, because usually, like, people that are going to the trouble of making raw milk are doing, they're raising their cows in like nice, clean, organic pastures. They're not like super like penned up and being pumped full of hormones. Because I don't know anyone that wants to buy like raw milk that's not organic.
Right.
I haven't seen a non-organic raw milk where they're like, oh, it's super synthesized, like, you know, right. Estrogen promoted and pumped full of antibiotics. Like, you never see that.
Right, right. Okay, cool. All right, so that's a lot of stuff. Hopefully that was helpful. I think we're done talking. We're done saying words now.
Cool.
Yeah, we said a lot of words. So, I mean, can I wrap us up and let us know how people can learn more if they want to look at their own stuff. And we'll see you guys next week.
Cool. Bye.
If you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the almost free 4-week digestion course at kickitnaturally.com. Or head on over to Will Schmidt's mybodyofknowledge.net. He's got some great exercise videos up and some stretches and articles and some yummy pictures of himself. So check it out. 'Cause I know the place where the sun